Well, if you're like most people out there, you're looking for ways to alleviate your stress. I know I was. Somebody told me about the idea of floating. And just the concept of floating on water and so forth really struck me as odd. But I went ahead and did it and had a fascinating experience. And quite frankly, when I found out about what was going on, this has been something that's going on throughout the country. Really interesting stuff. And we have somebody with us today that owns one of these places. It happens to be in Olympia, Washington, where I live. It's called Ole Floats. His name is Dan Larson, and he's an expert in energy counseling, professional in life coaching, and flotation therapy. And Dan, welcome to the show. Really interesting thing. I got to ask you, though, I know you didn't come, you know, it isn't like you're one of these people that were always into this thing right from when you were young. How did you get into this field?
Yeah, well hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on. My path to it was sort of unconventional. I was bailing out of my career in the corporate world and trying to figure out what I was doing with myself. And I was a marketing consultant at the time. And I found out about this weird sensory deprivation float tank place that was kind of buried in a healing arts center on the west side of Olympia. And I started doing some work for them, just sort of doing some demographic work and helping them understand what their marketplace was and what their business drivers were. And the more I started looking at that, the more my marketing wheels started spinning. And I started realizing, wow, this is a really fascinating world. It appeals to this group and to this group and to that group and to this group. This kind of appeals to everyone, which sounds sort of vanilla from a marketing perspective, but when you really boil it down into those individual groups, you can really start to focus in on, wow, it can really be a huge help for these reasons for these people and a huge help for these reasons for these people. So that's really where my first interest level first came. It was purely from sort of a business and marketing perspective.
Well, that's what I find really interesting about it, you know, the fact that when I went there, my thought was, okay, this is going to be one of those things. And if people haven't been to Olympia, Olympia is one of those places where you get a lot of crystals and, you know, kind of a throwback to the Haight and Ashbury. And there's some of that there. There's also some business people. There's military people. It's just a really interesting thing. And I thought, wow, this is something you're appealing it to everybody.
Yeah, it's a very interesting town. I mean, you have the politicians here because we're the state capital, Washington. So you have the Congress here. So you have all the shirt and ties and briefcases from the Congress mixing in with all of the hippies and the downtown people, and there's a lot of athletic community here and a lot of business people here. So there's a broad spectrum of sort of demographic profiles of people that live in Olympia. So I realize you're not specific to Olympia, but I think we as a community could be applied to different parts of the country too. But the more that I started to float myself, I started to realize the changes in myself as well. I was coming out of a 15-year corporate career, and I bailed out and was super stressed out. My body was not feeling good. I've been sitting at a desk 15 years, so my spine was not happy with me. So my mind was kind of focusing on how interesting this was and how many different places they could apply and all the different people that it could help. But on a personal level, I was sort of seeing all the changes in myself as a result. And I was an active meditator by that point, so I'd been studying Buddhism and Dharma. So I was a little bit ahead of the game in terms of the mind aspect of it, but purely on a physical level, which is something that everyone can connect with, I was seeing huge changes in just how I was feeling, how my body was responding to things.
Well, and like you, I'm familiar with meditation. We've had Dan Harris on the show a couple of times. But this is a whole nother world, Dan. I mean, this is just a whole nother – it's a whole nother thing because it's more than just meditating. There's a lot more going on.
There is. And, you know, one of the things that we often hear from people, and they sort of freak out at the idea of going in and looking at their mind, and they say, well, I don't know how to meditate. And there's this perception that, I don't know, you have to go spend 20 years in an ashram or sitting on a mountaintop in Tibet in order to really learn how to meditate. You don't. Meditation is simply looking at your own mind without distraction. And so a float tank is the perfect environment. It's an induced meditation. Regardless of whether or not you know, quote, how to meditate, when you float, you are meditating. There is nothing else to do but meditate. Your physical body is being sort of removed from the equation, and you become like maybe you experienced in your first float, Steve. You become sort of like just a consciousness in a jar. You know, at that point, you are meditating, regardless of whether or not you know how to. It's happening.
Right. Well, you know, Dan, let's take people through this. They're probably listening. What are you talking about, this floating? And it was sort of an interesting thing to me. I had no idea till a colleague of mine told me about it, and that's where I called you and wanted to try it out, and it was so different. So tell people what it is. They go to this place, and there's rooms that have water, and take it from there, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so the basic construct of a float tank is that you're in 10 inches of water, and there's 1,000 pounds of epsom salts dissolved in that water. So it's the highest salinity water that you'll ever be in. It's roughly equivalent to the Dead Sea in terms of how floaty it is. And so as soon as you lay down, you are removing the biggest physiological stressor on our bodies that we never think about right away, which is gravity. Gravity itself is a huge stressor on us, and we don't think about it, but it's happening all the time. As soon as you lay down, that's going away. So that's sort of the first leg in quote-unquote sensory deprivation.
Right.
The second part is everything is the same temperature in there as your skin. So the air temperature and the water temperature are between 92 and 95 degrees, which is average human skin temperature. And so what that is inducing is a loss of understanding where you end and the air begins, or where the air ends and the water begins. So losing the sense of where you end and your environment begins. So you're shutting down another one of these giant sensory inputs that we tend to never think about, which is tactile input on our skin. We have this giant organ all over our bodies that receives input all the time, 24/7, 365. So that's getting shut down as well. That's sort of the second leg. The third and fourth are the two that most people know about already, if they've heard anything about floating or sensory deprivation, which is that you tend to be in the dark and you tend to have no sound. But those are actually the most optional. Most float centers these days, including us, give you the option of, you want to have the lights on, have the lights on. You want to have sound going, have sound going. The purest experience from a sensory deprivation perspective is to have all four of those going, so depriving a body of gravity, tactile input, visual input, and audio input. But
Well, Dan, let me suggest to people, if you're going to try this, maybe you want to start with a little bit of the music and a little bit of light. I mean, it's pretty, mellow light. Because I did that. I tried it completely dark and so forth. And it takes a little while. Your first inclination is, oh, my God, I'm in a casket. And you get past that if you're willing to sit through it. But it is a bit of an initial shock. Do you hear that from a lot of folks?
We do, yeah. Claustrophobia is a real thing, whether that's clinical claustrophobia or just perceived claustrophobia, or just a general concern about being in a dark room. And so one thing to break down here, too, is there's several different types of float tanks, but what most people see is the classic tank, which is kind of the box with the hatch on the top that you go inside. It's about 3 feet wide and 7 feet long. So that's what you've seen on The Simpsons, on The Fringe. If you've seen a sensory deprivation or a float tank in the media, that tends to be what you've seen. And so a lot of people look at those and they're just like, no, you'll never get me in that box. That's crazy. Not to knock those types of pods, because a lot of different centers still use those. Those are the classic pod. It's the traditional float tank. But what a lot of centers use now and what we use is more of a float room, float cabin. So they're 8 feet long, they're 5 feet wide, and you can stand up in that. So you have a lot of space to stretch out, and you have a lot of room to breathe. You can stand up if you want to. So it is really more of a room that you lay down in rather than a tank. I think it's the tank notion that maybe triggers a lot of people. You're going to put me in a tank in the dark. So it just sounds a bit weird, right? So just know that if you have a center near you, chances are, I mean, there's hundreds of centers all over the country now. So chances are near you, if you are concerned about going into one of those traditional pods, chances are you can find a float center that has more of the cabin style or the room style that you can lay down in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you get past that right away. It's not,
initial reaction, yeah.
Yeah, it's just an initial thing. Because it's so dark in there, it's like whether your eyes are open or whether your eyes are closed, it's dark. But you get used to it. And then once I guess the easiest thing to tell people, too, is it's easy enough. When you start getting those feelings, you touch the side, and then there's a certain thing. Okay, everything's fine. You know, if you look at the water, you can't drown.
You can't. Nobody's ever drowned in a float tank. It's such high salinity water that it's actually very hard to turn over. If you fell asleep, even, and if you did manage to turn over while you were asleep, there's so much salt in the water that as soon as that hits your mouth and your eyes, guess what? You're awake. So, I mean, there's no way of drowning in a float tank.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting feeling. You know, you mentioned before about the idea of not feeling your skin, and it's true. you know, I thought when I talked to you before I got into that thing, I thought, oh, yeah, right. You know, that's just salesmanship. But you get in there, and honestly, I almost had to splash the water a couple times to remember, okay, I'm not just, you know, and I guess it's counterintuitive because you should just enjoy that. But if you get kind of like, what's going on? You just splash water. You know you're in water. But there is that point where, because of, I guess, the temperature similarities, it almost feels like you're floating in air.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're really not used to being, quote, out of body, right?
Right,
so
right.
So we're used to being in this heavy meat sack that we carry around, right, that has a lot of senses, a lot of sensory input, and has a lot of stiffness, and we're kind of used to that. So when that goes away, it feels weird, you know? I mean, there's that thought of, like, am I even alive right now? How do I know I'm alive if I don't feel my body? You know, it creates those kind of interesting thoughts.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting, and I'd like you to talk a little about, is the idea of time. You go in this thing, and you're in there for either an hour or 90 minutes, and you have no idea. It could be 3 hours. It could be 10 minutes. You lose track of time.
You do, yeah, and that's because of what your brain is doing. So somewhere around the 30 or 40 minute mark, Your brain waves start to shift out of alpha or beta, which are your awake brainwave states, and into a theta state. So there's alpha, which is your most active brain state, and there's beta, which is kind of awake but relaxed, and there's delta, which is you're asleep. It's the longest, slowest brainwave form. Right between delta and beta is the theta state. So when you first wake up in the morning, and you're still kind of recalling your dreams, and you have one foot in the sleep world, and you have one foot in your wake world, and you're hitting that snooze button over and over, and time doesn't really seem to have any meaning, and you think you have a lot more time than you actually do. That's because your brain is in that theta state, and so it's actually perceiving time differently. So that's one piece of the equation. And the other is, and I'm no scientist, I can't fully scientifically get my head around this, but I think there is a relationship between gravity and time, as Einstein taught us. So I think when you're removing gravity from the equation in your body, I think there has to be an effect on how time is being perceived.
You're right. But there's also, Dan, I mean, you told me you actually increase production of important things like dopamine and the endorphins, that kind of thing, but it also decreases adrenaline and cortisol. So, I mean, it's really a great state to be into, and one you really can't get any other way.
Yeah, it's funny. I find myself being very self-conscious of sounding too much like a snake oil salesman. Like, yeah, this is a cure for everything. This is a therapy for everything. But really, what floating is doing fundamentally is alleviating us of the stresses that we are used to dealing with, whether that is mental stress, emotional stress, sensory stress, physical stress. Stress is such a huge, huge thing in our culture, and more medical science is showing that it is the foundation of almost every major chronic disease that we have. So I view the float industry as being sort of like the antidote to our cultural malady, which is stress. So when you give your body this 90-minute window of time and your central nervous system this 90-minute window of time to not have to deal with all of the usual stressful inputs, whether it's sound, whether it's visual, whether it's temperature on your skin, any kind of tactile input, when you give it that 90-minute window of time to just not deal with all of that, totally unwind, the amount of stress reduction is huge. I mean, people come out and they cannot believe how relaxed they got. I remember that being my first reaction when I first loaded. It was like, holy cow, I didn't even know I could get this relaxed. This is really interesting because it's completely redefined my stress levels. Now that I know I can get this relaxed, it gives me new context for when I'm getting stressed out. All of a sudden, I feel my stress levels going up. I'm like, oh, well, now I'm comparing the stress level to how I know it can.
Yeah.
So,
well, when I left the place, I was in the car, and I was amazed at, wow, I really feel relaxed and so forth. And I have a feeling, I have yet to do the next one, but I have a feeling as you get more comfortable in there and really just forget all your trepidations you have about something that you're not familiar with, it really must kick in. Because I'm thinking to myself, wow, I felt more relaxed than I thought I did. And I didn't realize it until after I left. When I got, I go, wow, I feel good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's like meditation or yoga or anything. Nobody goes into a yoga class and expects to be, you know, busting up perfect asanas in their first class, right? Nobody goes into a meditation class and they expect to, you know, attain a state of complete nirvana in their first meditation class, right? It's the same with sort of, it accumulates. So the more that you do it, the more practice you get at it, the more quickly you can get into that zone. So initially, it takes, you know, most people 40, 45 minutes to get into that theta brain state. Well, the more you do it, that shortens up. So you might be in that state within 15 minutes. Some people get in there and they're asleep 5 minutes. They're out. as soon as they hit that environment.
Well, it's really an interesting thing. And what's interesting to me is a lot of people do it maybe once a month, you know, or so. Some people do it more often. I know you have regulars. You were telling me, though, that there are regulars that go like every other day, that kind of thing, because for things like fibromyalgia and even some of the people that have gone through military experiences, this is the one way they can get through this stuff, which is a fantastic thing for them.
It is, yeah. Some people do it every day. So we have a small group of people who come in and float every single day, and they keep harassing us for the fact that we have 1 day a week off. They're like, when are you going to open Tuesdays? You're going to be open Tuesday too, right? So every day we have a gentleman who's a vet who floats. So he's working on PTSD and traumatic brain injuries and all manner of injuries all over his body. We have another client who's a former police officer who's working through a lot of sort of physical and emotional experiences from her career, as well as fibromyalgia. We have another gentleman who floats every day. He's a freelance photographer, and actually he recently has been just observing. He keeps saying every day, he's like, man, I don't know when the drop-off point is, but it just keeps getting better and better. And he's kind of amazed every day that it keeps getting better. One of the things we've been kind of talking about, I've been sort of surveying the people who float on a very regular basis. And something that we're noticing is that their sensory acuteness is actually changing. So their hearing is getting better. Their awareness of their own intuition is getting better. So it's really interesting that by depriving senses, in some way it's actually strengthening senses. So it's really interesting. So the hearing in particular is something that we've noticed. And we actually had a study group of four women from Evergreen College. They came and studied floating over the course of three floats, and they were measuring a variety of biomarkers and looking at their own brain waves. But they noticed, too, that three out of four of them had significant improvement in their own hearing just in the course of three floats. So this was something they actually clinically looked at and tested and benchmarked with data. So it was really interesting. They took that back and presented it to the study group at Evergreen.
Well, and I think the more people like you get involved with this, and it kind of gets taken out from this thing that's really exotic and kind of new age to really also, you know, something that we can use as part really of healing. You know, I'm sure your doctors must look at this and say, I want my patients to be doing things like this. I mean, what great way to do preventative medicine than if you can keep that stress level down, as you said before. It affects so many things, you know, heart, high blood pressure, you name it. I would assume that you're going to start seeing a lot more medical research into this.
Yeah, so we're kind of at the point that the acupuncture industry was 20 years ago. So there isn't a lot of good clinical science around this, to be totally honest. There's an ocean of anecdotal stories. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of stories of people saying, yeah, this changed my life. You know, I was living in 24/7 chronic pain every day. Nothing worked. This is the one thing that kind of gave my life back. And there's thousands and thousands of stories like that. From a clinical science perspective, there actually isn't a whole lot out there yet. It's a relatively, even though it's been around for 50 years, as an industry, it's relatively young. I mean, it's gone through these cycles. It came back in the 80s, and then the AIDS crisis convinced everyone that being in any kind of body of public water was a bad idea. So it went away. It came back again in the early 90s and then went away. And really, in the last 5 years, it's exploded again. And so I think it's exploding because we're so stressed out. It's kind of like how in the forest, you know, where there's the plant that's poisonous will always grow right by the antidote for that poison.
Right.
If you've ever heard that. So I think the float industry is kind of mushrooming and popping up as a result of the fact that as a culture, especially in the States, stress is just this rampaging monster that's kind of out of control, you know? And so it's manifesting as all manner of mental and physical disorder. So I think people are just intuitively realizing, oh, yeah, this is where we can start to unravel. It's maybe I can continue to run around with my crazy overscheduled life but still find a little bit of respite. You know, if I play once a week, it's all kind of manageable. You know,
I'm really happy you brought up the 80s thing, because I wanted to talk with you about that. There was that time where, you know, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and in San Francisco, you know, the hot tubs were the bed of AIDS. It was like an incubator and all that kind of thing. Just people need to realize this is nothing, nothing like those old rent a hot tub for a half hour places. It's not. It was clean. I mean, you had facilities in there, you know. And I assume the industry is trying to do this, but your thing, it shocked me of how clean everything was. And I mean, you know, which is just spotless, which obviously is important to people, because I think in the back of their minds they still have that thing, you know. And it's not. It's got nothing to do whatsoever with the sex industry or anything like that, lest people think they can just go in there and rent a room for a while.
Yeah, well, I guess let me break down what our process is for keeping things clean. So, I mean, basically, these are cleaner than your bathtub at home. So we actually have a custom-designed system at Only Float that is gravity-drained. So between every single float, the water is completely drained out of the tank. It's then run through a 250,000-gallon swimming pool filter, so it's many hundreds of times more powerful than it needs to be. It's then run through an ultraviolet filtration system that zaps anything pathogenic with ultraviolet light. And then on top of all that, those two things are usually enough. But on top of that, we also follow Washington State Department of Health protocol for sanitizing water according to basically a swimming pool protocol.
Right.
So that's a pretty typical process for most float centers. The gravity drain part is sort of unique to us, but any float center that you go to will typically go through a double filtration process, and the tanks are fully drained and filtered between every single float. So it's totally clean.
Yeah, and that's important. People need to realize that. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, I think we all know the value of Epsom salts in one way or another, whether you had to soak your feet or take a bath for a particular reason. It's a wonderful thing. And one of the things you do, Dan, which is different than, again, even, you know, a lot of people like to go to massages. I never got the therapy out of massage. This is much more appealing to me than a massage. I know some people love it, and that's fine. But one of the things you do before they even get in there is you kind of go through their physical history. You want to make sure that, you know, they're okay for this, and you make sure that they understand what they're going to go through. And I think that's a really important thing, to make sure they're going to have the best experience they can.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's the obvious tips and tricks, like keep your fingers out of your eyes and type of body position to lay in. But we've noticed that people develop more of a relationship with it if they understand what's going on outside of their direct conscious experience of it. So, you know, most people don't really know how the parasympathetic nervous system works. They don't really recognize the deleterious effects of stress. They know they're stressed, but they haven't necessarily equated how that might be affecting them. So we do take a little bit of time beforehand just to kind of talk through, okay, when you float, here's what's going on kind of in the background. Here's how your brain is responding to it. Here's what's going on neurochemically. You know, here's what's going on with your cortisol levels and your adrenaline levels, and here's what's going on with your dopamine expression and endorphins. So we do give people a little bit of an education around that, just because you're not going to directly experience what's going on with your cortisol levels, right?
Right,
your
right.
Your direct conscious experience is, damn, I feel good. Man,
yeah.
I feel super relaxed. I don't feel like I really need to do anything right now. I just feel really good. You know, that's your direct conscious experience of it. What's going on in the background is that the nucleus accumbens part of your brain is lighting up, and this has been measured on fMRI studies at the LIBOR facility that Justin Feinstein runs. So he runs his own float clinic, but he also does a lot of clinical science around it. So he's done, and it's still a study that is ongoing, but he's done a study that has found that the nucleus accumbens part of the brain lights up and produces dopamine. So the brain is flooding with dopamine, which is your reward chemical, just makes you feel really good. And then the medial prefrontal cortex on the front of the brain is actually shutting down. So you come out just feeling really good, but also feeling like you don't really need to do anything. So that neural pathway is actually a huge indicator for potential treatment of addiction too. So, because that's the basic mechanism of how addiction works. You engage in the addiction behavior, nucleus accumbens lights up, produces dopamine, and then the medial prefrontal cortex says, cool, go do that again. Whatever that you just did, go do it. Go get more dopamine, get more dopamine, get more dopamine. I don't care what you have to do, go do it.
Right.
So, and that's basically how addiction works, whether it's gambling, alcohol, sex, whatever it is. And so that's what we found, what Justin Feinstein found in that study, was that, well, if it's lighting up the nucleus accumbens, but it's shutting down the medial prefrontal cortex, that's potentially an addiction, a therapy for addiction. So those are the kind of things that are going on from a clinical research perspective. But it's also, you know, give some context to what's going on in your brain when you float that you won't be consciously aware of while you're floating. You just know that you feel good.
Well, right? You know, Dan, I got to say, I think people are listening to this. I think they realize there's untold benefits. You're not going to know what it's going to do for you, but I'll tell you what, it'll be a fun experience. And if you go to a place like Holy Floats, and there's places all over, and we'll give you, in just a couple moments, we'll give you some of the places that are in the central and east side of the state here. But I got to tell you, it's a fun experience. And, you know, even if it's something you decide later, it's not for you, chances are, I think you're going to enjoy it. And I think you're going to tell your friends about it. Now, let's tell people, if they're on the west side, I can highly recommend Holy Floats. It's a real pleasurable experience, a nice place. How do they get a hold of you and find out more, Dan?
Yeah, so I'm going through our website. It's probably the best approach. So olyfloat.com, that's O-L-Y, as in Olympia, olyfloat.com. Or you could give us a call at 360-972-3031. We're also on Facebook, so we often share research and articles and updates on floating through our Facebook page, too.
Oh, I think it's well worth it. Dan, thanks so much for being with us. Really
My
appreciate
pleasure.
It. And we'll talk about this some more. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dave. See you next time.